Welcome to the Longest Stride podcast. Each week, we bring you engaging conversations with the global running community. We interview community builders and leaders and the incredible runners who inspire us all. We're by runners for runners. And now, here's your hosts, Jonathan Greenwald and Andre Morgan.
Today's guest is a pro triathlete and three-time Ironman champion, has numerous podium and course record to their name, and was dubbed the most interesting person in triathlon. Rach was recently featured in a Sports Illustrated piece, Living Non-Binary in a Binary Sport World. We are thrilled to have them on the show and can't wait to dive into their life, career path, and accomplishments. Welcome, Rach McBride.
Thanks so much for having me. I am really excited to be here with you guys.
Not as excited as we are, Rach, I promise. We've done a little background research and, of course, read that Sports Illustrated article, which is really fascinating. And I'd say even just kind of reading some of the things that you've accomplished, definitely want to say most interesting person in triathlon. The good thing about the podcast now is that we record with video to do our little reels, and love your hair. Oh, my goodness. Awesome. And the tats, and I can't wait for that to come out on the video. So definitely interesting. I want to start very similar to the way kind of we start with all of our athletes and our guests. And the reason I want to start this way is because it's going to tell us a little bit of something about your journey into pro sports, because part of the interesting is what we'll get to, but the other interesting part is kind of how you came about your journey in sports and kind of, we'll say, later in life, right? But maybe, Rach, if you can, maybe take us back a little bit. What was your exposure to sports kind of early on that led into triathlon?
So, you know, I grew up in a family that was quite active and really encouraged activity. My parents were, you know, they ran 10Ks and then they ran a marathon in the mid-80s. And so I saw them training for all of this and would join in on some of these like fun runs, you know, that the kids do, and was just encouraged to be in sport. And I tried a whole bunch of things. So I did basketball, I did soccer, I rode horses for a really long time, did some running, some competitive swimming. But at the age of 15, I was in my second of three high schools because we moved around a lot. And I just all of a sudden was like, no, I don't want to do sports anymore, and kind of quit all of the endurance running and everything. And that was 10 years. I didn't do any sports until I was about 25, and decided that I wanted to do something really epic, something that had like a big wow factor. So I was like, I'm going to run a marathon. And I started training for this marathon and ended up qualifying for Boston in my first marathon. So then I was like, well, if I qualified for Boston, I don't know when this is going to happen again. So let's go run Boston. Totally a new athlete, super type A and really gung-ho, and ended up really overtrained and undernourished for Boston, and wasn't a great race. But then the friends that I was training with for running, they were into triathlon, and one of my mentors in running was like, you know, Rach, you could be an elite triathlete. And I was like, okay, I'm going to be an elite triathlete. And so I just started training. I mean, I had been like a bike commuter. Yeah, totally. I had been a bike commuter, and, you know, I had that swimming background when I was a kid until I was 11, you know. And so I moved out to the West Coast, where the training was a lot better than surviving the winter indoors on the trainer on the East Coast. And I almost won my first race, and I just absolutely loved the sport, and it took over my life. And within a couple of months, I was amateur national champion. The next year, I was amateur world champion. And then I started thinking about Olympic level, but I was then in my late 20s, early 30s. And I was like, you know, I feel like I'd kind of missed the boat on that. And I got burnt out really quickly. I just like didn't know how to recover. I got injured. I had my first stress fracture, and I quit triathlon after a couple of years, went back to school, did another degree, raced bikes a little bit. And then once I finished that degree, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to like take the summer off before I look for work in my new career. And my cycling coach was like, you know, why don't you try this long distance triathlon thing? And so I tried my first half iron and won it by a whole lot and posted a time that would have put me in the top 10 in the world that year. And I was like, you know what? I'm 32 years old. I'm not getting any younger. I'm going to do this. I'm going to go full-time pro. And that was 10 years ago. And that was probably more of the story that you wanted. You just asked about my early life. I just gave you the whole thing.
No, that's great. And it's epic. I think even just with the idea of you mentioning, oh, I took some time off. I mean, your professional career itself, you know, took the front seat. And then you're like, well, you know, I passed Olympic space. But so it's almost as if you got into the success of it, but the real success came later in life. Because now you're a pro at what age?
I was 32 when I went full time. When I did my first triathlon, I was 28. And yeah, at the time, it just felt like an expensive hobby. You know, I didn't really have a whole lot of sponsors. I had a local bike shop I was working with, but I was really spending a lot more money than I was making. And I didn't have the support around me as well, I think, at the time. And that really changed a couple years later, that I had a lot more support, a lot of people really rallying behind me. And I felt like I had the confidence and freedom to be able to do it.
I have so many questions. So why don't, know, right? So Rach, my first thing is, it's so fascinating. First of all, I'm a little hung up on the kind of later in life thing, because I think we might be at a point in our lives where later in life doesn't really mean anything. You know, you started later in life, but you're like dominating the field. So that's my later question. Let me start with the first one is, your career and your journey was a bunch of fits and starts. You started running when you're younger, influenced by parents, you stopped a little bit. Then you started getting back into athletics. A friend encourages you to try triathlons, and then you stop, and then you get back in, and it kind of escalates into, like, you know, longer distance. So I was curious on, like, what that felt like, I guess, mentally, physically, to kind of be in and out of the sport for so long. And was it a commitment thing, or was the age something that was kind of too much, like, on your shoulders, that you felt like, oh, I don't know if I could do this, or maybe I could do this. I don't know. Like, what was it that made you kind of start, stop?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that every phase in my life and every reason for those starts and steps back have very different reasons. So I think when I was younger, I remember this really distinctly, and I really love this story because it is so, so telling, is that the day that I quit cross country, which was kind of like my last, when I was 15, this was my like last little athletic endeavor before my long decade of no athletics. It was the day of the first meet that we had. And I remembered being at school. I was in grade 9 at the time, and I just did not want to do it. I did not want to do this meet. I felt really uncomfortable. And I just decided then and there, you know, nope, I don't want to do this. And now when I look back at that, I know, because now I have been in competition and recognized that feeling of just not wanting to do it was like my body's natural physiological response to stress and to something exciting. And I didn't have the knowledge to understand that's what was happening. And I know back then, if I had just sucked it up and gone to that first meet and like probably kicked ass, I would have been in a much different place and would have like probably continued running throughout high school. But that didn't happen. And I can look back at it now and be like, wow, that was a really, really interesting moment of like not understanding my own body and my own brain, that now I know, like, I get that feeling every single start line, I want to go home and turn around and go back to bed. I used to think I was weird, but now I know it's normal. So like, I think that's what happened when I was younger. And now I think that I recognize now that the transition from just running to triathlon, it was like somebody had that confidence in me. Somebody put that idea in my brain. And at the time, I was really ready for someone to tell me that I could do something. I was really ready for someone to support me in something and have the confidence and to tell me that I was good at something. And I think that really pushed me to try this new thing. And I love the aspect that it's three different sports. I think with just one sport, it's like with just running or with just cycling, it's boring. Like, I don't want to go out and just like run all the time. I don't want to go out and just ride my bike. You know, I love swimming. I love being able to like do different things every day. It's really, really fun. And for someone with ADD, it's really great. It like keeps my brain really active. And I think that I think that transition when I stopped triathlon for the first time, even though I was becoming really successful at it, was the environment that I was in. It was A, not having that support around me, but then B, also just not knowing how to take care of myself and getting really tired because I was, it, my schedule was like, I was up at 4:30 in the morning, in the pool by 5:30, at work by 7:30, work until 3:30, do another workout, try and stuff my face with as much food as I could and get to bed before I do it all over again. And this was every single day. And then the weekends were heavy with training. And so trying to train as this, you know, full-time athlete, basically, and work a full-time job and have a relationship that wasn't super supportive of it, it really, it took a lot out of me. And at the time it was just like, I need to quote unquote be an adult because I can't just like continue doing this expensive hobby. And so let's go back to school and find this new career. And while I'm doing that, I can't train three sports. So let's just race bikes.
And did you think a lot of that start stop, even at the starting line, was just an anxiety, like a visceral reaction? As you said, your body's like, yeah, I don't even feel like doing this. All this running around before I had to go and no, I'm being tested kind of thing.
Yeah, well, it's just like a normal, your normal sympathetic nervous system, how it's that fight or flight, right? It's a super normal physiological response to coming up to this challenge. And, you know, most of us know, I think most of us have this experience when we step up to a start line. And I know that as soon as the gun goes off, I'm fine. Like I'm in it and I just like release the tiger and we just go at it. It took me a really long time to figure that out, right? It took me a long time to recognize that's what was happening. Even when I started in that like elite triathlon in my first couple of years, I thought, like I said, I thought something was wrong with me. I thought I was weird. I thought I shouldn't be there, that I was like an imposter because I would have these feelings. And it was only when one of my fellow competitors at the start line, she said exactly that. She was like, I just want to turn around and go back to bed. And I was like, it was a huge light bulb moment, right? Of like, oh my goodness, I am not the only one. Like, I'm not a freak.
Not at all. But I believe even also this entire time, you didn't have a coach or anything because you mentioned just someone just mentioning, hey, you can do this. Usually a coach would push you onto that, but you done all this without a coach prior?
Well, when I had a coach, but I probably was too, I probably didn't provide that feedback, you know? I probably just like kept it to myself because I thought it was an insecurity, right? It was like, if I said this out loud, then maybe someone would say, hey, maybe you're not supposed to be here.
Yeah. And then that just plays into the anxiety and it doesn't really help.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But you turned it around and pro and success and you start crushing it. And some might say, later in life, not a term I think we love to use often, but here you are, you know, you start having success and things are going really well. So kind of what was that turning point that you start realizing, okay, I'm an adult now and I've got talent and I'm going to put it out there and show the world. Like, what was that turning point like?
I mean, I think it really was that first half iron, you know, it was a local race, but I was racing against some local pros. And so, you know, I just surprised myself. I just couldn't believe what I had done when I crossed the finish line. And then my next race, a couple of weeks later was actually my first like international level, half iron. And I ended up on the podium in that race as well. And I remember just like coming into T2, coming off of the bike in second place and just like with this huge smile on my face and was like, I can't believe this is happening to me. Like, this is amazing. And It was...
I can't believe there's no one in front of me.
Exactly. Like, just this incredible feeling. And after that race, I ended up in third place. And the woman who was... Actually, the two people in front of me were both Canadian. And the woman in second place is now a dear friend of mine. And she was just like, who are you? Like, you are so strong. And to have this support, you know, from my fellow competitors was also really, really cool. It made me feel like I belonged.
Yeah, that's amazing, because and that word will come up a lot, just saying stuff that's amazing. I think it really speaks to where you felt like you had more. So even if you came off and you're like, okay, it's no one in front of me, but what's going on? And the smile just came onto you. Obviously, you love that. Thrive off just the idea of you doing, you know, at level, doing that well and surprising yourself. But I think it all add up from before when you felt like just totally burnt out and stuff like that. And you said in an interview, you know, one sport's not enough. Here you are doing three sports and doing it that well. So it goes beyond just, oh, I did a race and I'm good now. It's like a journey. And that's why we're trying to decipher it right here on the podcast.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing that's really exciting about triathlon is that there's like, and that keeps me, that has kept me interested for now almost 15 years is like, because there are three sports and each has like these different aspects that of improvement and training. And it's the, you know, the aspect of like actually putting them all together in order to be the fastest, because often, you know, you'll look at splits and the person who has like the fastest split in each, you're not necessarily the fastest in each discipline to go on to win the race. Like, you may just be like consistently the second fastest in each or whatever, and that gets you to the finish line versus like having this incredibly fast bike, but then like totally, you know, bailing on the run sort of thing. And so it's really not about who is the best in one sport, but who can execute all three of them in that order with the over that distance.
Yeah, I don't remember which article I read this in, but I believe I read somewhere that you hold on in your runs, meaning running might not be the strongest discipline. Like, what's your strongest discipline of the three?
Yeah, you know, it's really evolved over time. So when I first got into triathlon, my run was actually what got me the wins. My run was what got me on the podiums. But then I started getting a whole lot of running injuries, and I've had almost four or five stress fractures in my feet over my career. And so having those step backs in running forced me to spend a lot more time on the bike. And so that's how I discovered that I had a real talent for the bike and really, yeah, just like came into my own on the bike and really, really started to enjoy it. And now I am known for being a swim biker, because about 3 years ago, I also had this incredible breakthrough in my swimming. And so now that totally changed my career and like how I race. So now I am, you know, one of those folks who is coming out of the water at the top of the pack and then, yeah, being able to hold on and coming off often, first off the bike, but then the running, because I've had all of those injuries, it means that I am always feeling a little bit behind on the run, but I'm still working on it hard.
No, but I mean, even for anyone that may not know about triathlon, the actual transitions is its own challenge. So you mentioned T2, so between the bike and the run itself, that brick feeling, so just that alone, just getting out of that is not some easy feat. So, you know, kudos regardless. And even if your discipline strength changes, it's that injury. Just like when any physio would tell us, it's like, oh, you're compensating. That's why something else might get stronger. Something else might get weaker. And it's similar to the multidisciplinary sport.
Yeah. And just having to not having the consistency in the run training. So always having to take that step back and then rebuild after injury, that I think has really hindered my progress as a runner, unfortunately. But I'm in a good stint now. I haven't had a stress fracture in a number of years. And and last year I ran the fastest half marathon I've ever run in my life. So take that for like being over 40 and getting slower.
Yeah. The next time someone says, you know, later in life, too old for something. I mean, please, it's just, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Yeah. I started running when I was 40. Okay. So, and I've done what I feel is some really cool things in that time. And seriously, like, I don't know, I'm kind of glad I didn't start running when I was 20. So, you know, there is no, like, age is seriously, seriously, seriously. It's really about how you feel, right? Because, you know, and I noticed probably a lot of discussions I think you can get into about, is it better to start later in life or earlier on where you have all that time to get injured or have things break down? I mean, I'm sure that discussion go on for the end of time, but it doesn't matter sometimes kind of when you get into a sport. If you've got talent's always going to be there. It's not going to be something that's like, oh, I wish you would have tapped into me when you were 20, but now that you're 40, it's not going to happen. So I just love to hear that you're having all this great success. It doesn't matter how old you are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think there's also the mental aspect of it too, right? Of like, it's kind of like going back to school as an adult. It's like, you really care about this. You're not doing this just like because everybody else is doing it or because like, you know, you don't know what else to do with your life. You're like, no, I know what I want to do with my life and it's run right now. And so you get really passionate about it and you really care about it. And I think that's, you know, I can't imagine doing anything else in my life right now other than this. And which kind of scares me of like, I know I'm not going to be able to do it for the rest of my life. So I'm going to have to figure something out, but not at this level. I'm not going to be necessarily going to be able to like pay the bills with triathlon, but.
But it, as you mentioned, just it keeps you accountable because you care more now, right? Yeah. So you'd actually go out for those runs. You'd do it when it's not, you don't feel, when just, you know, the day-to-day stuff doesn't take up your time. And I think with any aspect, just as you mentioned, you may not be able to do this forever. And then what will you do after the fact, after doing different disciplines and being at the top of your game? But as you know, it changes, the level requirement changes based on with different brackets, just like Boston has a qualifier for a certain age group, you know, and we don't need to be harping on, we don't need to be harping on age or anything like that, but just the idea of, yeah, you could do it. Yeah, right. So there's masters, there's everything else. So don't put that out yet. And also from your experience, being able to teach. So that's still in the game. You know, we are asking, Jonathan and I are asking all these questions too, because we consider ourselves athletes ourselves in whatever amateur level, let's say, but it's the things we go through as well. And then we're learning from you, you know, the ruts you've gone through or how life has changed, why you even got into triathlon. Maybe the transition is triathlon after you've had some successes in running or cycling or the different disciplines. So it's not that you won't be good later on. It's probably what direction you go in based on your experience. But your experience is so rich and nourishing that you can pass that on to someone that's coming into that space or don't even know that they can. Just like your friend that gave you advice, like, hey, you should try a touchdown. Maybe you should tell us to try a touchdown. And, you know, I will go from there. So you still have a wealth of knowledge and you're still in the sport, regardless of participating or not, you know, so you could be a coach, let's say.
Yeah. And I think that's what is really inspiring too, for me, about having these conversations and just like being in the sport community is that we're all learning from each other. I am inspired, Jonathan, by your story of like getting into running when you're 40. Like that is so cool. And to hear those stories, right, of like people who like are defying the however many times they've been around the sun and like doing their first ultra distance things in their 50s and 60s and just like breaking that mold of who society expects them to be. And I think that's also really important is like, I really, really value authenticity and to know, to be able to have these stories of like, hey, I do this as a job, this is my profession, but when I step up to a start line, I want to go home and go back to bed. And to like, I think it's so important to have these conversations because it really connects us as like, oh, we're all human, right? Oh, pros are human too. Oh, pros get injuries. They have doubts. They have insecurities. They have the same feelings that I do, you know, as an amateur when I wake up in the morning, like maybe sometimes I don't want to do this workout. I get the same thing, you know, even though this is my job. Sometimes I wake up and I'm like, Oh, okay. I guess I'm getting in the pool this morning. But so I think it's really inspiring to have these conversations and to be in this, in these conversations of authenticity.
I agree. Okay. So let's talk about Purple Tiger. Where did that come from?
It was a nickname. Well, the tiger aspect was given to me as a nickname when I was a teenager and I had tiger striped hair. I was this punk rocker and I was living in Germany, and this little kid on a subway platform said, "Guck mal, Mutti, eine Tigertante," which means like, "Look, mummy, a tiger lady." And my girlfriend at the time thought it was hilarious. And so she just started calling me that. So then I took this tiger thing, and I love cats. I grew up with cats. I hope to be reincarnated as a cat, you know, if I could get a big,
a tiger or like a domesticated, like feline, like,
you know, I don't care any kind of feline.
A second of care.
I'm not choosy.
Your alter ego.
Yeah, totally. I always talk about, like, you know, if in the world of like body modification or transhumanism, if we're ever able to get tails, I really want like a big fluffy tiger tail. That would be amazing.
That's a different podcast, Rich, but people do that. There are modifications. You've seen those, right? Like horns and all the kind of work.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's my previous life.
The problem is that it will give you an advantage in transitions. No, you could change your shoes while getting the bike ready. And no one wants that. I think the reason why Jonathan bringing that up is just that it just the name alone, it's almost as if it's your aesthetic, and how you carry yourself. And in the tiger aspect of it, you know, it's considered as something just like, everyone wants to be a tiger if they want to bring out, you know, for lack of a better term, a more dominating side of themselves. So it goes so well with their story and how you perceive yourself and how we're even having a conversation with you. So I think it's very, very, very fitting.
I'd be a purple sloth.
But JG, you got some things under your belt.
It doesn't matter. I still like could be like lazy as hell. So I want to be purple sloth.
Hey, go for it.
I love it. Yeah, I mean, I love the idea. For me, tiger is like cats. Like, there's this like ferocious side of them, right? That's like this really fierce, and like on the outside, they like look really fierce. But then, you know, just like myself, I have this like, you know, really soft and kind and like playful and like cuddly part to me. So it's like, you see what I look like can be really intimidating and fierce. And when I get out in competition, I'm super fierce. But if you just talk to me a little bit, like, I'm pretty nice and I'm really approachable and I love connecting with people. And so, you know, I love that kind of dichotomy. And I remember when I was younger, I was volunteering in a hospital. And like, I had a mohawk and I had this like massive leather jacket with like giant spikes all over it. And I'd started to get tattoos. And I remember one of the nurses saying, like, "When you first came in, you know, we thought you were going to be this like angry, mean person, but you're just the nicest person ever." And I loved that. I loved like shaking up people's perceptions of like, you know, who it's like, I look this way, but I'm actually, you know, really different than what you might anticipate. And I really liked kind of like shaking up those people's perceptions and perspectives and making them kind of question how they judge people from the outside.
Yeah, it's a good lesson not to judge just by appearances.
So Rich, we covered starting later in life. We covered the purple tiger. So now we're starting to get a better idea of why Rich is the most interesting person in the sport. Let's talk about kind of the next part of this. And Sports Illustrated just ran an article with you and some other pro athletes, which was a very fascinating read. We'll put it in the show notes. And first of all, congratulations on Sports Illustrated. That's absolutely remarkable. And the story behind it is also incredibly remarkable. But before we get to Sports Illustrated, maybe you could just take us back a little bit before that. April 24, 2020, triathlon.com ran an article about you. And it was just about you. And it talked about kind of you being a non-binary advocate for triathlon. So it seems like right around that time, that's where you started to go from, and you're still pro athlete, but now pro athlete slash advocate and for non-binary athletes. What was that turning point in deciding, okay, now I'm going to let the world know that I'm more than just a pro athlete with purple hair. I've got a story to tell.
So how all of this really came about was that I had someone really special in my life who started asking me questions about who I was and just being curious about some of the things that I said and some of the ways in which I moved throughout the world and some of the ways in which I saw my own body and some of the ways in which I saw my own gender. And it really made me start to recognize, as well as I was going through this process of sort of really working out my own self-worth and having a lot more self-compassion, that it made me recognize, hey, this is something that's really important for me. It's something I've been living with for my entire life, and is a common theme throughout my entire life. And that, what does it mean? Like, what does this actually mean for me? Where do I see myself fitting in the world? And why do I feel weird when I show up at a start line? Why do I feel uncomfortable, like I don't fit in? And why do I feel most comfortable looking like this or being called this or identifying as this? And it got to a point where I realized that I just needed to be me. I just needed to not try and fit into a box, to not try and fit into what I thought my sponsors or the sport wanted me to be, and to recognize like why I felt weird when I stepped up at that start line, is that I didn't identify as the gender that most of my fellow competitors are. I didn't identify as a woman. I didn't identify racing as a woman, and that the world, that the term non-binary and is something that just, it really fit for me. And the reason why I had been using they, them pronouns for quite a long time, but had never really like gotten rid of she, her. I really sort of had stuck on to that and thought, oh, I don't want to commit all of the way. I don't want to have to, you know, spend that energy and really like jump into that world of truly being a non-binary person. And things just kind of turned around for me when I finally got the confidence and I finally was asked that question of like, why do you keep those pronouns? Like, why do you still use them? And when I really thought about it, it was like, I keep them because I don't want to make other people uncomfortable. And that was really profound of like, you know what? It's okay to be yourself. You don't need to hold on to this just to make other people uncomfortable. You have a right to be happy. You have a right to be who you authentically are. And it was a really profound moment for me. It was really scary. And I also realized that as soon as that article came out, I realized I was not the only one. I realized that there were other non-binary athletes out there who were quite invisible. And they were reaching out to me and they were like, thank you. Or they were parents of kids who identified as non-binary, which just blows my mind. Because back when I was their age, I didn't have the language. I did not have the language to understand who I was. It wasn't there. There were these two, it was the binary you had to fit into. And it's just been this incredible experience of, I just finally feel like myself, and I finally feel like I have found the words to describe who I am, and it's just truly a life-changing experience. And it's really hard. It's really, really hard. It's been amazing in the world of COVID when like it was sort of in this vacuum, right? That there was no racing happening or anything like that, and so everybody was like very supportive and on board and like, you know, I was having all these conversations and it was all wonderful. And then I get into competition and I recognize, oh, wow, I'm back in this binary. I'm back in this place where I have to do a lot of explaining that I am getting misgendered all the time. And I'm like, okay, now it's hard. Now I recognize back in competition and back in this world where now I am living my truth and it's amazing. And this is where it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of energy and sort of managing myself a little bit differently of like, okay, how am I going to do this? Learning how to communicate with people and having the courage to just advocate for myself and stand up for myself.
Yeah. My initial thought there was when you're about to respond to the question, that sigh, it's like this weight on your shoulder because you wanted to do justice in clearly explaining how you felt. So you still care on how people perceive pronouns, and you're educating each time. So it must have been such a weight on your shoulder to having to do the actual explaining when in even the sport itself, where it is about the standing and stats, and they need a category to put you in. So that's a different level, because you could have been living a different lifestyle, not as a pro athlete, and you would be perfectly fine, not even have to define yourself. But in this space, your stats is another way of checking off boxes. So I could imagine, I can't relate, but I can imagine the amount of navigation you have to do. And the fact that you're speaking up is, that's what probably made you so hesitant, because it's like, hey, I have to make sure I'm so you use this term before, it's like just integral, just like so true about what you mean or what you say, because you can't change. It's not, you don't want to change again. You don't want to know, not identify as a different pronoun or just kind of mess with that again, because this is it. This is who you are. And as you said, you didn't find a category yet, but you found it now. And I'm sure you're helping others.
Yeah, it's been a really profound experience. You know, I think that even, you know, you talk about pronouns and it's like I finally found who I am and found the language to describe who I have felt for my entire life. And on the flip side, you know, there are folks whose gender changes like year after year, right? It's like it's gender, because it is something that change, you know, it can change over time. It can be something that.
No, I know your train of thought was saying that it's fluid as
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's not just,
yeah. 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 Totally. Yeah. Gender is totally fluid. It can be really fluid for people.
Trey, I'm so glad that you took, you responded after Rach gave that explanation, because we've been doing this podcast for just under a year and we've recorded like 40 of them. That's the first time, Rach, that someone kind of went through an explanation of who they are as a person that I felt. Like I felt that explanation. So, So thank you for sharing, because you know, Dre, I don't want to speak for you, but I use pronouns he, him, and at work. So I work for a big pharmaceutical company. And in November, as part of kind of a diversity and inclusion, they encourage everyone to use their pronouns in their signature. And I've had it ever since. It's in my Instagram, all that stuff. But it's one thing to put it in there and to like be an ally and to say kind of, this is our space, like let's share this space and, you know, we're supporting you and et cetera, et cetera. It's another thing to actually talk to someone and to have them explain it to you. And like you just did, that it just like, I seriously felt that. So thank you so much for kind of helping us kind of understand it. Don't worry, we have more questions, but still like understanding what that must have felt like, because that's not something that like I would experience. So Dre, again, can't speak from what might not experience, but that's a different thing for someone to go through. It's not like you wake up one day and it's like, yeah, I just don't feel like riding the bike anymore. It's a part of who you are as a person, and it's something you struggle with, and something that you not only said, okay, I need to identify what this is, but also but you decided as a pro athlete, I'm going to let others know as well. And regardless of kind of what my sponsors think or other athletes, et cetera, you said, okay, I am going to, you know, tell the world kind of what my feelings are and who I am, right? So I think that's an extraordinary thing. So I guess oh my goodness, so many questions. But the first one was kind of, what was maybe the initial reaction in the triathlon world when an article came out, and maybe friends of yours you competed with?
Yeah, the response that I received personally was overwhelmingly positive. It was, you know, and I had, it was a little bit calculated as well, because in years prior, I had kind of put like little feelers out there on my social media and in talking with people in the triathlon community, and put these little things out there about gender and about how I, you know, kind of identifying across the binary, and or at least my gender expression was across the binary. And overwhelmingly, the response was really positive. And so it's almost like I had these, like, you know, small little comings out there where it helped me build the confidence to know that, okay, my community is going to support me. They're going to love me. They're going to understand, and this is going to be a safe place to do this. And I am so, so grateful that I have this platform and I have these folks who are just like, they've got me, they've got my back. And what happened when the Triathlete magazine article came out is on their Facebook page, there were quite a number of negative comments of people, you know, who don't really understand, or, you know, thought Triathlete magazine was, you know, shouldn't be talking about these kind of issues, blah, blah, blah. And initially it was like, it was upsetting, but it was also, it was a lot of things that I had already heard before. I didn't really take it personally. I knew it was just like, these people don't know me. And I kind of wish that I could like sit down with each of them and like have a one-on-one conversation. We can just like talk and be real with each other. And I had to reach out to some of my friends in the trans and non-binary community of like, should I be the one addressing these comments? Like, should I be going in there and spending my energy to help educate or try and just like change people's minds, you know, or whatever, defend myself, I guess. And the advice I got was like, you know what, unless it's your on your wall personally, or somebody sends you a personal message, don't worry about it, you know. And what happened was allies came out and did the work for me. They came out and they showed their strength and their positivity, and they responded to those comments. And it was incredible. It was just an incredible feeling to see that, to see perfect strangers, people I did not know at all, coming out and responding to these comments. And it was really, really incredible. And of course, Triathlete magazine as well made their own comments that were positive. And so it really felt like I had so much support. And that it was, you know, all of these folks were creating this really safe and powerful space.
Yeah, I think it goes back to that initial thing you mentioned on the podcast earlier, us being human first. So take away all that. These are just like broken people that are in a comment section. So regardless, it could have been your stat, it could have been anything else. They'll always have something to say. You know, it's the old gatekeepers, it's the old announcers, it's the people that didn't want to change anything.
Keyboard warriors.
And the people that are not pros. So it's this envious space, and it's just the worst, like, it's not even energy, it's just the worst kind of something that want to pull your energy away from you. And then it's good that they give you the advice to defer from trying to spend your energy to try and fix these people. You can't fix that, you know. And then the allies in the space, they've felt the energy of, they themselves may have not felt a way to express even just a little bit of any identity issues, you know, that they may be having, you know, just may not have found a term for it yet, right? And as you said, it's fluid, so it can change over time as we age as a person. But even you were chatting with Cody Beale, who is a Canadian queer triathlete, so you're not the only athlete that from the queer community that actually compete at a higher level. So it has nothing to do with gender or pronouns or identity. Your number speaks for itself. So I think that's the part we should get back to, you know?
Well, yeah, and totally. I, you know, this is kind of my argument in all of this. It's like, what is how I identify? How does that affect you? How does that change your life or harm you in any way? You know,
just broken people.
I let you, you know, I'm okay with you being you as long as you're not hurting anyone else or yourself. Everyone has a right to play sport. Everyone has a right to be who they want to be as long as they're not hurting anyone else or hurting themselves.
Yeah. And just let's close on this part, because the reality is that when it comes to the comment section, and oh my goodness, it doesn't matter what it is, the comment section, people live in that space. Because Rach, you just said a few seconds ago, part of your argument, that's exactly what they want. They want an argument that could have zero basis of any facts, or it's void of facts. It's void of anything. It's just like, I don't care what the topic is. I just want to argue. And you could put anything up there. It just happened to be a topic on being a non-binary pro athlete. It could have been like, I think pistachio ice cream is the best. And you're going to get someone in there that's going to say, no. Cookies and cream is the best. I don't care what you're saying. There's something seriously wrong with you. But like, there's people that live for that because that's exactly what they get out of life is there's nothing else going on. So let's see if I could just naysayers. Turn someone's gears. Anyway, let's get past that, because the number of allies in this space are it's growing. Greater. They're growing, and they're growing for so many different reasons. They're growing because of athletes like you, Rach, that are saying, look, this is who I am. This is what it is. You're an advocate. So you're not only saying kind of, this is my story, but you're giving others the space where now they can say, you know what? I have a similar story. And if Rach could tell their story, I'm going to tell, you know, my story, right? So now I think you're going to start seeing a lot of that. The other thing that's kind of remarkable about this space is now we have pronouns and we have corporations and everything that comes behind it and brands that are starting to use pronouns and make pronouns is normalizing the use of pronouns, right? Like 3, 4, 5 years ago, no one was saying he, him, they, there, she, her, you know, no one was saying that. Now it's so normalized, right? And it's becoming this thing where it's like, this is mine. Well, hey, what's yours? This is mine. And I think that it's starting to become this space now where, and maybe it's the world that we're living in, I guess. I don't know, Rich. Maybe you could tell me because it's your experience. But it's now becoming common for people to have these conversations and to start, and I don't know if it's pandemic or not, but say, you know what? What is your story? I'm so interested. Please tell me your story. And you're right. It doesn't necessarily impact me directly, but it's interesting and fascinating. And again, it's probably why you were coined the most interesting person in triathlon. But again, like, this is what we need. This is why you're here. And this is why we love speaking to you.
Yeah. You know, I think that, what is happening is that it's like, if you look now at the stats, I think it's, you know, there's some research that was done recently, a couple of years ago, came out that it's like, you look at the generations coming up now, and it's like 1 in 5 kids, 20% of kids identify outside the binary. And you know, that's huge. That's like, now we're in this place where these generations are growing up with a completely different identity of gender and understanding that, like, you don't have to fit in these boxes, that it's like this, it's a fluid, like, self-expression, wonderful, everyone accepted kind of thing. And that it is about being curious about each other, which I think is so powerful. Like, that's how we make community in this world where we are in, like, such huge, you know, populations and in big cities. How do we find connection? How do we find community? And I think it's just so powerful now to be curious with each other, right? Just to ask Absolutely. Questions. And this is really cool too. The thing now that I'm doing is starting to have conversations with local race organizers and event organizers. And they are now looking for ways that they can make their events more inclusive. And there's so, you know, from my perspective, from a gender perspective, there's some really, really easy things that don't cost any money that events can do. And it opens up this space for people of all different genders to feel like they have a place to participate in sport. And I really feel like, you know, a lot of folks are like, well, we could create this other category, but we don't know if people are actually going to come and race. But you know what? People like me haven't, if they identify as non-binary and they look at a race and there's like two categories and they have to pick one to fit in, they're not going to feel comfortable to participate in sport. But if there's a place created for them, then absolutely. You know, it's like when they started creating the Clydesdale and the Athena categories, you know, it kind of opened up this space for, oh, there's actually like this special space for me as a larger athlete that I fit in here. I fit, I don't need to look a certain way or like be a certain weight or whatever to compete in this. And so creating this more open environment, creating a space where non-binary athletes feel welcome, it's, I think we're just going to see an explosion of people coming to race and joining sport, which is incredible because sport is life-changing.
Oh, don't you know it? And it has to start from somewhere. So even if there's one person in that category, it exists. Yeah. And that's what you're saying. Like it needs to exist for me to even check it off. And the fact that they're bringing you to the table to then have the conversation and not doing it under your behalf, because us not knowing the knowledge or not experiencing it could just like, oh yeah, maybe we should do this and kind of put a lot of band-aids on things and not thinking of the actual, where I could just invite you to the table and have you explain how this should work. And, you know, you did say in an article about just deconstruct the whole thing, start from scratch again, instead of trying to like fix around things. So the organization itself may put append things on, but maybe just think of it from scratch again, right? Because it shouldn't be hard to rebuild it up from scratch. You know, an example would have been, I'm sure a race announcer needs to get some of those colloquial things out of their speech in order to adjust the other pronouns. They're cheering on an athlete and they'll just use what they know, kind of thing. So I had to train myself over the time we've been identifying different things to be able to have those conversations. You know, I work for a tech company as well. And one of the onboarding part of it was the first time we're meeting someone online is like asking their pronouns. So it's just a simple thing as that, where you don't have to go with the awkward conversation after the fact, but ahead of time. So what have you thought of that they might have identified as a change that could make really simple and quickly that could just be so great when it comes to something like this?
I mean, I think the biggest thing really is just starting to use more gender neutral terms. So like when you're addressing groups, just observing where you're using gendered language. You know, if you walk up to a group of people and you say, hey, ladies, or hey, guys, you know, that happens to me all the time. And I'm like, well, I don't identify as a lady. Like, I don't, you just like, you know, address the group as something, but now I feel like an other. Now I really feel weird and like an outsider. And so I think that's one of the biggest things, is just like starting to see where you use gendered language, where you don't need to use gendered language. And I think that, you know, so that's like in the event website, in your race announcing, everything. And if somebody does identify as, you know, within the binary, absolutely, you know, use he, him, use their pronouns, like use how they identify. I'm not saying to like eliminate all gendered language, but just in the context of like generalizations. And then the same thing with gendered spaces, making sure that you're really clear that people who are gender diverse are welcome in these gendered spaces. Then I'm talking about bathrooms and change rooms and that sort of thing. Because that, I think for people who are gender diverse, those gendered spaces are the scariest places to be. So it's like everybody has to go to the bathroom. Everybody has to change their clothes. I want to be able to have a safe place to do that and not be harassed, not be told I'm in the wrong place just because of how someone perceives my gender. And so I think that, yeah, just being really clear that gender diverse people are welcome is really important.
Yeah, we started seeing a lot of that happening in bathrooms with signage and stuff like that, the gender neutral bathrooms and stuff like that. And it's a step, right? And so that's really good. But you're right. I mean, races, it's a whole different ballpark. So now what we're seeing is, so what we saw in the past was where there would be, and you mentioned boxes a few times. Now we're talking about ticking boxes. When you go to register, it would say male, female, or it would say prefer not to disclose or prefer not to say. That was a step. but it wasn't the full step.
Mm-hmm.
So now what we're seeing is Sporting Life 10K and Run CRS are starting to have male, female, prefer not to say, and non-binary. So that's another step, which is great. So Rich, that's a step, but there's still more work that needs to be done. For instance, when you see a lot of athletes that are going to be participating or even participating today, they could take a box and identify as non-binary, run their race, and great. But what about professional athletes? Athletes that could potentially podium, athletes that are eligible for prize money, and not even pros, like anyone. I could win a race and podium, right? But like anyone that wins a race or podiums, now you're talking about another step that probably needs to be taken when you look at kind of prize money and you're looking at categorization as far as athletes in that perspective. Like, is that something you think that we can get to with racing?
Well, you know, I think it's really easy to add a third category. So whether that's like an all genders category or a non-binary category, it's so simple, especially for smaller races where we're not talking about thousands of dollars. We might not even be talking about hundreds of dollars. We may be talking about like a hat or a water bottle or a t-shirt or, you know, a bike tire or something like that. And so it's so easy to just add another category. And, you know, there are so many more race organizers now who are starting to do this. I know Lifetime Events and all of their events, they're adding a non-binary category. There's a local here in BC, there's a local race organizer who has added a third category to their entire race event series. And in the ultra running world, this has been happening, I think, even for the past couple of years. So it's not new. And it's very easy to do. And in terms of, you know, when we get into the professional level or the pro level, you know, that's a giant question mark. I don't know. I don't have an answer for how at this point there is not a field of professional non-binary athletes. And so it's not really something. I think it's what we're going to see, you know, as non-binary categories open up in local racing, we're going to get more and more athletes. And it's just like, you know, in terms of like the challenged athletes, having all of those different categories is really important. There are so many different categories and everyone is there. Everyone has a place to race. They have a category. And so we know how to do it. It's simple. It's easy. But yeah, in a professional level, I don't know. You know, but I would say with registration forms like that, where you have to check off a box, I still don't really understand why we need to check off a box. Because it's like, what does it matter how I identify? It's just what race I'm going to be in. It's just, am I going to race in like the men's race, or am I going to race in the women's race, or am I going to race in the non-binary race?
So when someone puts in, I prefer not to say, what exactly are they going to do with that data?
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. And I think with that, it's, so Rach, we're not looking for you to have the perfect answer for all of it, because it really comes on the race organizer themselves to educate themselves or seek guidance to, in order to create these categories. Because I'm sure that if they wanted to create a new category to add additional distance, they already know, because they are organizers of events. So it's for them to just open it up once more. And I had this thought, and I don't know how, I haven't thought it through yet, but you know, you have Mr. and Mrs., like the salutations on front. Use that category to fix that kind of identity a bit, you know, because who uses Mr. and Mrs. and that type of stuff to do anything with it anymore? Yeah. So I think if it was a technical thing, then use that as the drop down, let's say, and remove that part of it. Because before it was like females has to be utilized, you know, a married partner's last name. Like, who uses that for anything? So utilize that space, I think. And I believe with your studies in genetics, I want to know if there's an aha moment that came to you where it's like, this is like, I've studied this, and with my athleticism and also my identity, was there a thread between all that? Like ever, like just ever, you were talking about tails earlier, but I don't know. It's crazy. But you're studying genetics. Like how? Like it's too perfect for not to be an aha moment.
Well, I think that what's really important to understand is the idea that like sex and gender, at least in the world that I operate in, are two different things. So people often use the words interchangeably, but they're two really different things. So like sex, we're usually talking about like biological sex or anatomical sex. And that's like what your reproductive organs look like, what your chromosomes look like, what your hormone profile looks like. That is sex. Gender is a social construct. It's something that we create as a society that we have defined, and we define, you know, we created this binary of like male and female, or man and woman, or masculine and feminine, whereas there's this whole spectrum. It's the same thing, though, honestly, to a certain extent in the realm of sex, because we do have people who are intersex. So we do have people who aren't necessarily like male or female, but are on this spectrum in between. And it's very different than gender, but it's something that like when people say they're, oh, there's just two genders, or there's two, just two sexes. And it's like, it's actually like none of that is true. None of that is true. And that, I think, is a lot of the education that needs to happen for folks.
That clears it up so much for me, because you could be attracted with someone, right? You should be attracted to someone, and it had nothing to do with those things that were created. It's literally having categories for, it's like useless gender, how they make toys and stuff like that. But I think that just puts stuff together for me, as you mentioned, the fact that there's just this sex, and then there's like what you're attracted to as a just a human being. Yeah, that opens up a whole new idea for me.
You know what? You were speaking before, Rachel, you were talking about racing and all that stuff, and you said how easy it is. It's incredibly easy. You know what it takes? One race director in this world, on this planet, to decide that they're going to make those changes. One, it doesn't matter. Just, it could be a tiny race in the middle of nowhere. It could be a massive world marathon major, you know. And sorry, I know you kind of, Dre, you kind of segued into education and stuff, but just kind of coming back to that point real quick, because I was thinking about it as kind of you mentioned this, it just takes one. And it's the same thing with anything that kind of has transpired in this journey, is it just takes one person. And I think even reading that Sports Illustrated article, and we should probably talk a little bit more about it, because it's super exciting that you were even on there. Just looking at that article.
It was very exciting.
Come on now. So did I read that correctly, Rach, where it's only three pro athletes that are non-binary, or three athletes that we know about that are non-binary in sport?
Yeah. So I know that there are, at least, I mean, this was a huge surprise to me as well. I'm like, there's only three of us? Like, whoa. I do think that maybe in some other sports, like maybe in some of the fighting sports, there might be some non-binary identified. I really don't know. I don't think that article was like a comprehensive list of all of the pro non-binary athletes. But to be honest, like before that article, I had no idea. I had no clue of any other pro athletes who are non-binary. I had heard rumors of some, but that was the first time that I had actually discovered and like learned specifically who these athletes were. And that was really mind-blowing to me. It really put into perspective, like, you know, people have been saying this is a big deal and that this is like a really big thing, and it's really courageous of me. And I'm like, I'm just being myself. Like, I'm just being who I am. But to recognize, like, oh crap, like, wow, this is a big deal. Like, we are really leading away in the world of sport for non-binary athletes. Like, that's pretty amazing. And I feel really honored to be on this path.
So Lisa Sweetman, who said, oh, you really should interview Rach, this incredible athlete, and have them tell their story. I was like, yeah, excited, excited. And then during kind of like the prep and talking through this, one of the comments that came out of it was, you have to see to become. Now, I don't know if that's something you came up with or something she heard before, but just thinking through that, and you say there's only three non-binary gender athletes that we know about. There might be more. And you have to see to become. Like, yeah, it was probably incredibly scary for you to be in that moment a few years ago. But look at what's happening now. You're going to start seeing this. And it's, you know, soon this will be something that is just something that you just, when you say, I'm surprised, we'll no longer be surprised soon, because that's going to be the world that we live in, where people just feel like, this is who I am. And then someone will say, okay, thank you for telling me. Instead of this dialogue on what does that mean? Now we know what it means. Like, we know what this means because we're having a conversation with you. Our listeners will know what it means if they don't already, which they will. But that's all it takes. It just takes one courageous athlete, two, three courageous athletes to pave the way.
Yeah. And to be honest, my courage and the language and my self-discovery really also didn't happen without those people who are not necessarily athletes, but who are out there in the world being themselves and being their authentic non-binary selves. So I, you know, had people on my radar who I don't know, but I see them out there in their world, not necessarily in the sport world, of being themselves, and other trans athletes who are being themselves. And that really was my example of like, oh, hey, look at these folks. It's okay. They are doing this. And it's incredible. And it's the same thing of like, I think that we're all just trying to be who we wished we saw when we were younger. If I had seen and had the language to describe what I was feeling and who I was when I was 5 years old and wanted to get my ears pierced so they would stop calling me a boy, or to be okay with how I wanted to dress or how I wanted to express myself, that would have made all the difference in the world. It would have been life-changing. And I would have gone through this, you know, the past decades of my life understanding with a much more concrete and authentic understanding and comfortableness, a comfort in who I was, and not just questioning like, why don't I fit in? Or just having this like underlying feeling of discomfort of like, I feel weird, I don't fit in, but I don't know why.
Yeah, I think you've been breaking barriers from like day one. I know if you've seen this trend. So it's okay, cool, I'm at this age. Okay, whatever. Barrier, and you're like, okay, well, I do sports, okay, well, pro level, and it's like, you know what, another category is here. I'm like, well, I'm not that category. So just like anything, you just like, let me just smash it. And it's like, oh, I'm supposed to look a certain way, let me get a tiger right now, like, let's go. But yeah, if you've seen that trend, it's like, you don't conform. There is another probably animal out there or like marine creature that doesn't conform. And that's your other alter ego. But again, it's so awesome because I've learned so much just speaking with you directly and not just jumping in on what's a fad. And I think what will happen from this is you and your peers will be able to create guidelines for these same announcer, legal organizations, and that type of space that may not understand it, or they've been so ingrained in the system for so long, they never even thought of it. So when you provide that material for them, then you'll set it up for anyone in the future that wants to be able to be part of these events without being judged. Because you can imagine this might have stifled so many people before to even compete, because they're like, hey, what washroom am I going to use? Okay, I'll just not do this anyways, because it's so many different levels. And you've overcome all three that I've identified so far, but there might be more.
And it's a process, right? Like, this is happening over time. Like, we've come from a place of like people just not understanding whatsoever. And it's like, no, like there's male and female, men and women athletes, and that's that. To now a place where race organizers are reaching out and wanting to be part of this conversation, wanting to be part of the change, but they're still making mistakes and nobody's perfect. And then we see these generations coming up where gender is no big deal whatsoever. And so I think it's not going to happen overnight, but it's this slow process and slow change. And it's really, really cool to see it happening and to be part of the change. It's really, really neat.
Let me tell you an interesting little thing that happened just a few moments ago. So you saw it on camera, Rach. You saw Trey. My son walked in just before and he said, what are you doing? Well, I record podcasts every Monday, buddy. Every Monday I record a podcast. He's gonna be 12 on Saturday. And he's like, oh, like, he's like, saw your hair, Rach. He goes, who's that? I said, that's Rach McBride. I said, Rach McBride. I said, yeah. Rach is a non-binary pro triathlete. I said, do you know what that is? He goes, of course I do. He goes, do you know so-and-so in my school? I'm like, no. He goes, they're non-binary. So they're already having this discovery and these conversations in school. My son's in sixth grade. They're already having these conversations, and he walked away and he's like, that's cool. So yeah, I think the world is, I think it's a different world now. Yeah. And I think the world is changing, and I think we're discovering together. Rach, you're going through this discovery and we're going through it with you. And it's why it's so fascinating. And just listening to kind of you walk us through this, it's fascinating. So thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Hey, JG, you want to bring up CRS? Here's a race organizer that is doing it. I don't know if that came across there, Rach, earlier. The fact that, CRS is adding that on their website now. They've made changes. Jonathan reached out, Lisa reached out, and they were just like, yeah, we're all over it.
So, amazing. Yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of race organizers now all over North America who are reaching out. I think there's a Philadelphia race that has a non-binary category now as well.
I think it's a big Philly race. Yeah, there's a big marathon in Philly.
Yeah,
big one.
And which is just so great. It's so cool that people are like, hey, we've got a non-binary category too. Like, come race in our race. I'm like, everybody traveling all over North America racing in these non-binary categories. I love it.
I don't know if we're going to record this part, but I think you should just run with it. That's what you do. You fix these inconsistencies and these, you consult on that kind of space because you've done it so well for us that I believe you could do it, in a technical term where they pay you for your consulting time to get that right and just run with it. I'm here giving you a different career. I was just go with it. Let's go with it. Like, we shouldn't be there like, hey, you should do this, because it's almost like being an ally. It's like, oh yeah, but you don't know enough. You're not so close to it. It's not the same, me advocating for people of color to be in different spaces and blah, blah, blah. But it's not the same, but it's a role that you just got to take in and run with it, regardless of how it might seem far-fetched or like, oh, I'm not anybody really. But if I have two people on my Instagram, I tell them anyways,
I have one more question, actually, that I'm thinking about. Rach, you had a support system. You had a few friends, it sounds like, when you were going through the process and you were deciding to come out as non-binary, you had, it sounded like, a support system and individuals that you could talk to about it. What advice would you give to anyone that is maybe in a similar situation where they're also struggling with their identity? And now that, we have ways to discuss it, and we have folks like yourself that can have that conversation and they can look up to and say, oh, if Rachel can do this, then maybe I can too. So it's a kind of a long way to get to the question, but what advice would you give to anybody that is maybe having similar struggles, whatever age?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I mean, I think that finding your allies or finding your peers is really important. So I know that there are a lot of folks who may not feel like they have support around them. And that is so tragic. And my heart really goes out to folks who feel so alone. Sometimes people are alone. Sometimes people are in communities where there isn't a lot of support. Their families may not be supportive. Their friends may not be supportive. And if that's the case, I think that most communities now have LGBTQ community centers or support groups. Universities are a great place to access that kind of thing. Most schools now, I feel like, have safe places for people of different sexuality and different gender identities. And that's what those places are for. Those are places that you can reach out and find people. And it may be really scary, but it is scary. It's about having the courage to just step out and ask for help. Another option as well is to find support in like a therapist, in a LGBTQ positive therapist, someone who can be on your side and understands. And going through either your local primary care sexual health clinics, like Planned Parenthood is a really great option to find different supports in the community. Actually, and because those places are really LGBTQ positive. So it's kind of in these like unlikely places sometimes that you can find that support. And, reaching out online. We live online now. I'm available. Like, I am here. You message me on Instagram, I'm going to message you back. particularly if you're someone who is non-binary and is struggling. I'm super here. I'm super available. I look at all those messages and I will respond. Finding other athletes or other folks out there. You know, there are several other non-binary athletes on Instagram, on social media, and just reaching out to them, because we're all in this boat, right? We understand how small of a world it is and how small of a community is. And, you know, chances are one of us has gone through the same thing that you're feeling right now. And so, you know, we're all out there in the world and it's easy to find us.
Yeah, and I'm sure the hesitancy would be also they themselves not knowing they haven't decided to. So I believe the non-binary is that space to be able to not even have a decision, but identify as that. And as you said, fluid, you could then kind of find your place.
Yeah. And there's, you know what, there's actually also, you know, there's so many ways you can educate yourself as well. So much information out there about non-binary, like, folks, this is what happened with me. When I came out, I was like, I don't know anything. Like, I don't know any other non-binary people. And so I went to YouTube and I started looking at YouTube videos that people who were non-binary were putting out. And as soon as I started watching these videos, I was like, it was so validating, because it was like, yes, like, this is exactly how I feel. Or like, yes, I totally have this experience. Or like, yes, this is, I'm seeing myself in these people. And it really was validating of like, okay, yeah, I figured it out. It was like all these puzzle pieces put together. There's actually this really amazing podcast too that was just put out, not to advertise another podcast on your podcast.
Nope,
but
please,
it's a BBC podcast called NB. Yeah, and it's about like 8 episodes, and it's hosted by these two amazing non-binary folks who just like, it's really straightforward and like really open and authentic and fantastic. So it's just letters NB. It's a BBC podcast, and I'm in the middle of it right now. I haven't even finished it, but it's just, oh, I'm loving it so much.
My non-binary life.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Oh, I love it. Rach, this has been an absolutely extraordinary conversation. And I don't know about Dre, but on behalf of the Purple Sloth, I feel like this has been an absolute, like, extraordinary conversation. And I feel so much more, I don't know, like, maybe enriched. I don't know what the right word is, but I just feel like I learned so much from you and from this conversation. And yeah, I can't thank you enough. And Dre, I'm sure, you know, the same. Can't thank you enough for coming on and kind of sharing your experience. And I know it's not always easy to have these conversations, but they're important conversations and they're helpful conversations for everybody, for us, so that we can understand, and for anyone that's also a non-binary who's looking for maybe answers or where they could go to speak to someone and to understand kind of what they're experiencing. So super grateful and can't wait to see you crushing it out there. And, you know, when you're into your 60s and 70s and still smashing triathlons, like, it's going to be great. So thank you so much for joining on this podcast.
Oh, thank you, Jonathan and Dre. This has been so, so wonderful. Amazing conversation. And yeah, I'm already see your Purple Sloth logo in my head. It's
going to
happen.
I don't know. You shouldn't steal your color. You need to have
a different
color.
Something else. I'll do Red Sloth. Red is
my
color.
He's just ripping the whole thing.
I'm just stealing.
Even Red's, you know.
Yeah, it's too close.
But yeah, it's been so great. You've educated us. And with that being said, this is the Longest Stride Podcast. Peace.
Peace.